Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Okay.
Hi, am I speaking with Kiba Cairo?
Yes, this is she.
Hi, I think we had a bit of technical difficulty. I kept saying hello, and I don't think you could hear me, and I could see you on, and you I think you hung up or got disconnected, so I was waiting on you to come back.
Yes, no problem.
Okay, did you hear me read? You were on while I was reading your biography. Did you hear me read any of your bio?
I heard nothing at all.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, this is internet radio, and sometimes there are some, you know, glitches, so I appreciate you hanging in there with me. How are you
doing today?
I'm
doing well. How about yourself?
Good. And so I just want to make sure that I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Is it Kiba Cairo?
Correct.
Okay, wonderful. Very pretty name, by the way. And
thank
I just
you.
Want to congratulate you on your book, Don't Snooze on Clues. I believe I met you at a year or two ago at Harlem Book Fair, and I received, you know, some information from you and got
did
on your
you?
Email list. Yes, and I've been receiving some really great information about your book, you know, over the internet. So I'm very, you know, honored that you would take time out, because it sounds like you're very busy in working with parents and educators right now.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I didn't even realize that that's where we met. But thank you so much for following with me. This has been a journey.
Oh, of course.
I absolutely enjoy it.
Oh, of course. And I do always appreciate meeting fellow authors and people that are doing positive things in the community. So I definitely want to support you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And so, Ms. Cairo, if we can get into some of your background, what inspired you to write and publish Don't Snooze on Clues? How did you know that this was definitely something that was needed for the community and needed for, you know, our schools, for children, for parents, if you can talk about that.
Okay, well, in order to give you that type of background on the book, I think I have to go back just a little bit more about myself so that you can totally understand the full scope as to why I published this book. I studied communication at the City College, the City University of New York up in Harlem. And I actually went to work for some of the city's top agencies, such as New York City Department of Health and NPA, Capital Construction, where they put my marketing skills to work, where I thought I was going to put my marketing skills to work. But more, what I ended up doing was more outreach. With New York City Department of Health, I worked with the Lead Poisoning Prevention Program and Healthy Homes, educating parents, moms, pregnant women about safety practices. While I worked for the NPA Capital Construction, once again, I was kicked into the community. So I've always been a community-based kind of person where all of my jobs stemmed around being in the community, educating parents, educating women, safety practices, telling them, informing them of things that they don't know. I do believe that that's part of my passion, is like just informing our communities of things that are that may go over their heads, or just the fact that it's not readily available to them. After working as a consultant with MTA Capital Construction, I realized that that's where my entrepreneurial bug kind of really bit me really hard. And I've dabbled in several businesses before, which I felt that they all have led me to where I am today. What some may call failed businesses, I would call experience under my belt. So
wonderful.
It took some time. Absolutely. I just gather I have a lot of tools, you know, by this time. Because
right.
I've dabbled in so many businesses, you know what I mean? So I took some time off of working on anything when I had a difficult pregnancy. And I ended up on bed rest for about a good 2 to 3 months. And if anyone who has had a difficult pregnancy would know that you are stuck and you have lots of time to think. So I got time to clear my head and just start thinking about the things that I want to do. And I just wanted to be a better mom. So when my daughter was actually 2, my son was 6 at that time as well, the Sandy Hook incident occurred. My son was going to school at that time, and he wasn't feeling very comfortable about really going back to school and safety. So the conversation of safety started happening a lot in my household because at the time he was only 6. So I didn't think, like, I needed to have so many of these, like, conversations of safety and safety. Yes, I dropped little droplets on him as he goes along, but when he was faced with this on television, on the newspaper, it was everywhere. So he then became frightened to go to school. And because of that, I had to have several, like I said, safety conversations with him. And I figured, well, if I'm having this difficulty and if I'm having this conversation with him, I'm pretty sure other parents had to have some kind of conversation with their kids. And so that brings me back to your question of what inspired me to write this book, Don't Fool, Don't Clues. It's just I have such a huge safety background working with Department of Health as well as NPA. And then here it is when I'm trying to relax and not think about any kind of work anymore, because I'm just like, I want to be a great mom. That's all I want to do. There it goes. It bit me again, that entrepreneurial.
Right.
Thing. And so I couldn't help myself this time. I'm like, you know what, this is a really cool project. Since I'm an at-home mom now, I'm just going to go ahead and run with it. And, of course, I published the book, and it has been a whirlwind ever since. But it's nothing.
That's
that,
wonderful.
It's something that I absolutely love. And, once again, it kind of threw me into the direction of outreach and getting back into the community, because now I go into the schools and have workshops with children. I do adult workshops. I'm in the community. We've met at the Harlem Book Fair. I go to different book fairs, and different speaking panels and just anything that I can get the word out about safety and kids, because I think those are my two passions.
Well, that is wonderful, and you sound like a very energetic person, so when you have your purpose, you're going to go, and like you say, get the word out, and you're going to do it in any way that you can, and I really applaud that. Now, your book has recently won an award, I'm sure more than one. Can you talk about the type of recognition and the reactions that your book has received?
Oh, my gosh. So that was such a surprise to me that we actually were chosen as one of the finalists for the national, oh my goodness, now I forgot the name of it. 1 second. Okay, so we recently received an award for the National Independent Book Awards, and we became one of the finalists. And so that was pretty exciting to us because although we did not get picked as the winner, I mean, out of all the thousands of books that they actually had their hands on, we were actually one of the finalists. So that was
and
a huge surprise.
And you said, I'm sorry, just because I am tweeting, also want to let people know who may be listening live or might listen later, the name of the award that you were finalists for again?
The National Indie Book Awards.
Okay, wonderful. National Indie Book Awards. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then as the book has apparently been really utilized throughout schools, different organizations, can you talk about what the age, the suggested age range or reading level would be for your book, Don't Snooze on Clues?
Absolutely. So the targeted age range is right around from kindergarten straight through about fourth grade. So we're talking about the 5 to 9, 10-year-olds. And a lot of books cater to the middle school and the high schoolers because Lord knows that bullying and violence runs rampant within those age range, within those grades as well. But I do workshops with the high schoolers and the middle schoolers. However, this book really targets the younger kids because I believe that we can eventually start phasing out the whole violence and bullying if we start with the younger generation. If we start teaching them from young that, you know, you speak out if you see something. Don't think that you're snitching, because as I go out into the community and I have these conversations with young kids, I mean, kindergarten, first grade, and I encourage them, we read the books and we start speaking of safety and I encourage them to speak out, it blows my mind how many of these kids will say, that's snitching. And so we're raising up a community of kids that will rather see someone being hurt, see another child being bullied, see a friend with a weapon and not say anything rather than to try to say something and bring awareness to the situation. So I focus on that younger age as well as it being the age that my son was, and that's the language that I had to speak to him. So I just transferred that same language over into the book.
When you say focusing on the younger age, are you saying that younger children are more open to not being involved with that whole no snitching rule because they, you know, they care about their peers, they care about themselves, and they don't have the same fear as the older kids?
Absolutely. I think that when they're younger, they can be shaped and molded. And if we create them from young, letting them know about awareness, being aware of your surroundings and different things like that, as they grow up, these things are already instilled in them. Obviously, one book isn't going to do it. Parents play a major, major part in it. And that's why I always say that this book is a great conversational piece. It starts the conversation of safety. So it has some very fun illustration and pictures in there that the kids usually giggle when I do book reading, and it just gets them in a comfortable place where you can just ease that message in there and slowly start having that conversation and building on it. It's not a one-time thing that we have to do. We have to really just keep depositing information into our kids at a younger age so that when they are in the older grades and they encounter these things, they know exactly what to do. It's not something foreign. It's not something that they're hesitating or nervous about. It's something like, okay, When I go into the schools, I really do try to decipher and break down the whole snitching versus speaking out to the kids. And many a times I get the reaction of, oh, I never thought of it. Like, so it's just a matter of educating them and letting them see that what you're doing is actually helping people. You're not necessarily running to get someone in trouble. You know, you need to speak up in your community and help others that are in danger. So that's really why I really enjoy that younger age, because I feel like as they get older, you can actually shape and mold them into whatever it is that you need them to be.
And Kiva, can you talk about the other dangers that children may be fall prey to or possibly witness, other than bullying or peer fighting and conflict of that nature? What are some other things that children and parents need to be aware of that you're an advocate for?
Well, you know, bullying, when we say bullying, oh, my gosh, bullying is such a huge umbrella because there's so many prongs that fall under there. The newest thing is the cyberbullying. A lot of parents are going totally unnoticing that these kids are being lured, being teased, being all these different things through the internet. And if you ever look around and take some time to look around, every kid has some kind of electronic device in their hand, whether it be a cell phone,
yes,
but it could be the parent's iPad. It could be like a gaming system. Like, I really didn't even realize that my son's PSP, like his handheld game, has the Netflix on it. So he's able to access things that, and he's like, yeah, I could have found that a long time ago. And I'm just like, how?
Wow.
You know, it blows my mind because we're not aware of the advances that technology is giving our kids. So you don't need to have a phone in order to be bullied or in order for some person to kind of lure your kid and play games with them, you know, simultaneously and then tell them, hey, let's meet up so we can continue these games or something like that. To be aware, because there's so many things. There's the cyberbullying that we have a rise in abduction. Our kids are being abducted left and right, and it just seems to be going under the radar. And people aren't necessarily aware. They're expecting some masked man, you know, coming in a car and kind of abducting.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the case these days. We
have people that look creepy, and it's not always someone who looks creepy. Yeah.
And that's exactly how the book starts off. It starts off by saying, do you know what a bad person looks like? Because we have this stigma of it's a person in a trench coat and he's creeping around and she's creeping around. And that's not the case. And we need to, like, debunk that and get that out of our kids' heads so that they realize, yes, be aware and alert of everyone around you. It's not just the man that's, like, standing in the corner peeking, looking at you. It might be your friend's father or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's so hard. And you don't want to instill fear in children, but you have to make them aware of things.
You know, Kia, you're an educator, and being an educator myself, we're always trained about, you know, safety, and you have to go through all these different certifications. And but there's such a rise even in educators who appear to be, you know, having some inappropriate actions with kids. You know, it's now that's rampant. We worry about, you know, what kind of professionals who are certified to help and teach your kids, what kind of, you know, behaviors they may be having. And so now when you talk about safety, it's like not just, you know, out in the street. It could be safety in the school and helping kids unrecognized behavior, even in adults that they're supposed to trust
that
is inappropriate, you know.
I teach my kids about their personal bubble a lot from a very young age. Excuse me, I have a dry throat. From a very young age, I spoke to them about private areas and areas that no one is to touch. And then I started talking about their bubble. I said, and no one is supposed to enter your bubble. That means if someone is coming too close in your face, if someone can touch you, touch your nose, they're so close they can touch your nose. I'm like, these are areas that they're in your personal space, they're in your bubble. And so this way, we're not just saying, we're telling the kids that no matter who it is, if they enter this space, it takes away from them just labeling who is supposed to be in this space and who's not. If you just
That's
tell them
right.
no one is supposed to be in this space, then they understand that it doesn't matter whether it's an uncle, whether it's a teacher, whoever the coach, no one is supposed to pat you on the butt when you do a good job. No, that's your personal space, and you should let your mommy know about that. And so I try to take away what we tend to put a look on a predator or a look on a person.
That's right.
Yeah, we try to take that away and just let them know it doesn't matter who it is. It could be mommy
that's
or daddy.
True.
Don't let anyone into your personal space.
And
so that's
see,
how
but
I
when we were. I know when the generation that we're, you know, probably in, I remember when we were raised, you know, people who are older than you, you treat them with respect, you know, your elders. And now, as you're mentioning, we have to go so much deeper than that. Every adult of a certain age, you kids still have to have a discernment, you know, as you're saying, discernment. And just because they're of a certain status or position, you still have to be observant. And so I appreciate you saying that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's how people gain a kid's, a child's trust with their status, their position, the authority they have, and thus and so. And we're hearing more and more about that. People that we're becoming shocked of, like you mentioned, you know, the coach or this person that you've known in the school system that your whole life or whatever. It's not that, you know, the position does not dictate whether the person has good character or not. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even with, you know, some instances where, you know, they would use things like they want to take, oh, you did such a great job. You know, Ethan, let's go out for ice cream. They use the things that the kids love the most. It's the way that they get kids' attention, you know. And I always tell my kids, there was this one video that was going around social media about this guy that did an experiment in a park. And he actually asked the parents, how likely is it for your child to go with me or to even speak to me? And the parent was like, no way. I taught my child better than that. And so he said, do you mind me going up to your child? And they said, sure. And sure enough, what did he use? A puppy in his hand. And the kid ran, and he said, do you want to pet my puppy? And they said, yeah, sure. And he's like, I have other puppies. Would you like to come? And every single child went with him. And the parent was appalled to see
that
because it's not a one-time conversation, and you cannot put a picture of a person, of a type of person, to let them know that this is a bad person. This is a person that you shouldn't talk to. This is, you know, you really have to, like, let them know. I tell my kids, can I give you ice cream? Yes. So would you accept ice cream from someone who's offering you ice cream? There are so many social experiments that I let them watch as well with me. And my daughter the other day, I showed her this one where they had some kids doing an art craft project. And the kids, an ice cream truck pulled up, and the man came out and said, hey, guys, would you like some ice cream? The little girl hesitated. It was a girl and a boy. And the little girl hesitated. He's like, it's absolutely free. So she's like, I'm okay. And the boy was like, okay. You can see the hesitance in there, but he's like, free ice cream, you know what I mean? And then he said, have you ever rang the bell to an ice cream truck? So it's all of these little things. And so the kids actually got into the truck where the parent was actually looking at a monitor, and they were devastated to see that the child actually went in. The child got the ice cream. And at the end of it, my daughter is like cringing, and she's like, no, you're not supposed to go in there. And she's like yelling at the computer screen because I'm showing her how people use different tactics to do different things to you. Yeah. So we have to, like, really just kind of keep exposing them and letting them be aware. I also tell them about having weapons, you know. Like, sure, you may not have a weapon in your own home, and you may not carry it, but what if your friend shows you and tells you, come and check it out?
That's right.
What do you do then? Would you go and touch it?
What if you're at their house and the parent has a gun, and they know where the parent's gun is, and they just want to show them and be, you know, they want to impress their friend, and that gun could go off.
Absolutely. And even things such as, I even had in the book about recognizing unattended backpacks. It's such a sad thing that I have to tell kids, if you see a backpack sitting outside of your school, but no one is around it and everyone else has their backpack on, do you think you should just ignore that? Or should you just tell a teacher, hey, by the way, I see an empty backpack or a backpack that's sitting outside. And I have to teach them this now because this is a new, like, almost a norm that we have to teach our kids that a backpack sitting around is not a good thing anymore. So as the world develops and as we move and the world turns, it just seems like we have to just keep throwing what I feel is a lot of information at them, but you have to do it just slowly and be consistent with it. And that's really what I tell the parents, is just be consistent with your conversation. Communication is such the key to really helping the kids to understand.
It's so important. And Kiba, we have 3 minutes out on the interview.
Oh, my God.
Can you go ahead and tell us where we can, I know the time just flies. Can you go ahead and tell us where we can find your book, Don't Snooze on Clues, and give us your website, and we definitely want to keep in touch with you and follow what you're doing.
Absolutely. So you can get the book on Amazon or BarnesandNobles.com, BNN.com. It's also available on Don't Snooze on Clues, and it will lead you straight there. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter, at Kiba Cairo is my handle name. We also have a lot of great things that are coming up. We have the launch of the Spanish edition that will be launching at the end of this month, June 30th. So I'm really, really excited because we have a lot of kids that that speak Spanish and are not able to understand the English version. So I'm just really excited that we're coming out with the Spanish version as well, so that the parents who don't speak English can actually speak to their children. And that's really the key here. So I'm excited about that happening.
And so you do have your and you have all your events listed on don'tsnoozeclues.com.
All of the events are going to be listed on don'tsnoozeonclues.com. If you would like to join our mailing list, I also advise you to go to don'tsnoozeonclues.com and join our mailing list, because I keep you abreast of all the things that we're doing in the community. We have some great things like camps and different things that are coming up and I'm really excited about. So check us out on don'tsnoozeonclues.com and you'll be updated with all the information and everything that we're doing in the community.
Well, that is wonderful, Kiba. I want to congratulate you on your success. You sound like such a dynamic and positive woman, and we definitely need you in the community to continue pushing for child safety. Definitely, everyone, please visit her website at www.don'tsnoozeclues.com. Follow Kiba on Twitter at Kiba Cairo and also on Instagram. Congratulations again, Kiba, and I do look forward to following you and keeping in touch with you on the success of your book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
And I was just speaking with author Kiba Cairo. Join me in the coming weeks as I do part two of my interview with author Mac Williams, and look forward to speaking with literary advocate and author Patrick Oliver. Thank you again for listening to Rhymes, Views, and News Talk Radio, and talk with you soon.